Good morning. It is 8:04 and you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio and I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Today we have live in the studio, Dennis C. Theriault. He's the Portland Mercury News Editor. Welcome. Thanks for being here, Dennis.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
It's so early in the morning and we are this morning hosting WTF Just Happened Elections Recap this morning. And actually a lot of crazy stuff happened yesterday and I'm not using any expletives at all, although they're right on the tip of my tongue.
It's an easy result to drive expletives out of a mouth right now.
Right now. Last night I went to the Hilton Hotel Democrat Party. Then I slid over to the Greens Party. And then I went to Carol Collimore's party on North Mississippi. Were you over there holed up on the Hilton Hotel?
I was holed up. It was a bunker, it felt like. I mean, because you went so deep underground, there was no cell phone service. And
really?
And everyone was going outside to check, you know, what's the results? We don't know anything. Everyone's, you know, otherwise relying on TV.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It got a little stale in the air after a while down there.
And at the Hilton, I mean, I stayed there for a while and the candidates did not come down. The candidates were like on the 28th floor. Each one probably had their own separate silo bunker,
mm-hmm.
Right?
And so that's right. And they came through occasionally to give a speech. I mean, you know, Blumenauer came out pretty early because he was called easy. David Wu came out and talked, and it was perhaps, you know, everyone really wanted to see John Kitzhaber, and he didn't come out until almost 11. Wu's speech was one of the most uninspiring pieces of rhetoric you'd want to hear at a time of sort of nail-biting tension. It was all about Congress in 1930 and Congress in 1940, and it was the microphone almost wasn't on, and I think they didn't mind that.
But I do want to point out that Bill Bradbury came through on a Segway mm-hmm. at the front of a conga line of 20-year-old Democrats.
That's true. They were all wearing Bus Project.
And they were going, woot, yeah. Woot, or maybe it was just him. I don't know.
that might have been the most lively thing that happened there. That was about it.
Right. Anyway, so let's just general recap the things that struck me when I got up early this morning after going to bed late last night. On Twitter, okay, I'm a Twitter head. I'm a tweep. On Twitter, African Americans are trending because only 4.7% of African Americans nationwide voted.
Wow.
Also, there are currently no black senators. Okay. There was a very nasty throwdown on Twitter among young African-American tweets this morning over all these issues. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit more later. From what I understand, a record number of gay BLT candidates elected to office.
Wow.
Interesting how the money went down. And Kerry Chisholm at Blue Oregon, he was reporting at 2:30 this morning basically a statistical tie between Democrats and Republicans in the Oregon Senate and in the Oregon House of Representatives. We'll see how that plays out. That I don't know if that's going to be even standing by this hour. The county precincts I think they're going to start updating their ballot counts. Is it every hour, Dennis?
I believe so. And I think starting maybe 7 minutes ago, actually.
Right. In other interesting news, Green Mayor Bruce Delgado was elected in Marina, California, 57% of the vote. I'd love to complain about the Greens a little bit later. Oregon governor still undecided. Mm-hmm. That crazy Washington Senate race with that wacky Dino Rossi and Patty Murray, that's still undecided. I think from what I understand, Metro President still undecided. That's actually going to be a kind of a far-reaching race in a way, although those candidates were not so stark. Neither of them are Tea Party members or anything like that. But Russ Feingold gets thrown out of Wisconsin. People were practically slashing their wrists on the internet over that last night.
I've got a lot of Midwestern friends. I grew up there, and that was certainly the lament in Facebook status update after Facebook status update.
Right. Mother Jones said this morning, oh, my God, Ayn Rand is a senator. Yeah, anyway, on that. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa. We've got Dennis Theriault, the Portland Mercury News Editor. Who did you vote for? Who did you vote for that won? Who did you vote for that you wish had won? What's your take on what the heck happened last night? Give us a call. We're at 503-231-8187. Dennis, here's the thing. So I work at the Scanner newspaper. The story in the black press this week is that a polling firm in California mm-hmm. did a study about campaign spending by gubernatorial campaigns in California and around the country. And they found that no advertising money, no campaign money was spent in any media outlets in most races. In some races, campaign money was spent in Spanish-speaking or Hispanic media outlets, but none spent in Black media outlets anywhere. I called up the our colleagues at the Pacific Northwest Minority Publishers. That would be the Asian Reporter, the Hispanic News. Didn't have a chance to get back to me yet. Mm-hmm. I also spoke with our cool friends, Mark Washington, his family at the Portland Observer. That actually held true in Oregon as well. No governor campaigns spent any money in any minority media outlets of any kind. And actually nationwide, that's pretty shocking because you've got some Black-owned radio stations, television stations. But when I look at this issue, 4.7% of African-Americans voting, and you look at how close some of these races were, I have to look at you and say, what the heck happened there? It's like so many, especially Black voters, but also, you know, other minority community voters, they just feel like the Democrats take them for granted. Why should they care?
I think if you're a Republican, if you're a Tea Party candidate, that makes sense to me that you would not focus your advertising budget there. In California, I know Meg Whitman spent a lot of money trying to chase down Latino votes, which obviously didn't work when they found out she excoriated her former housekeeper. But I'm actually surprised that Democratic candidates didn't do that, because you're absolutely right. 4.7% turnout is terribly low. And I think you can't take for granted a group of people. You cannot do that and expect them to vote for you reliably if you don't address their needs and their issues.
I thought that was common wisdom, too. And here's the other thing that strikes me about it is, yesterday I spent some time looking at coverage of election patterns 2 years ago when the president was elected. And there were loads of stories about how record numbers of young people and people of color, especially African Americans, registered to vote. And it seemed like that could have been a strategic wedge that these consultants, these campaign consultants, could have picked up on and built on. And it looks like it was just left there.
I think everybody decided to focus on so-called independent voters this time.
It doesn't look like it. Well, you know what? I was just going to say that for a lot of people, the losses of liberal candidates, that's a problem. But for the people that won, that was the solution. So I'm sure that they were happy that only 4.7% of African American voters voted. Anyway, do you have any other takes last night? Anything else really jump out at you?
Well, I was surprised that that voter owned elections in Portland didn't get off to a better start. It opened up with a 5-point deficit for most of the night. That's tightened since this morning. But I'm really surprised. I know that was a huge issue for the bus project and some of the other get out the vote pushes that I think are the only reason that Kitzhaber is as close as he is right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not surprised that is close, although I'm worried because of how many votes he still needs to make up in Multnomah County, given I think there are 75,000 ballots left to count. And that's, he's got to pull almost as many as he's been pulling all night, 70%. And I don't know that he's going to keep that up. Maybe he'll, you know, there's other votes to count in other counties still. Eat into that.
And we do have a caller, but I want to say really quickly, these issues of the governor's races, I want to say there were something like 37 governor races around the country that were up for grabs. The governor's races are really key because we just had the 2010 census, and all over the country, governors have some role in how redistricting takes place. In Oregon, it's not such a far-reaching role. The Oregon governor has the power to, I think, veto whatever the House of Representatives comes up with. But this is why that's such a crucial race. And we do have a caller. Thomas is on the line. Thomas, what do you think? What WTF last night?
Well, it's disheartening, and I can't say it was a surprise at all. However, I sort of figured this was happening. Personally, you know, I just have to say thank you. You know, we can thank Obama, first of all. We can thank Obama, and we can thank all of the people at the head of the Democratic National Committee and all of the tireless supporters and boosters and starry-eyed, hypnotized supporters of Obama that saw fit to, instead of all along, as Obama and the Democrats and the Blue Dogs continued to reward Wall Street and ignore the plight of the people and sign off on the criminal wars overseas. And the most creative thing that the boosters in the Democratic Party could do was to sit around and make excuses and sit on their hands and talk about this phony baloney model of bipartisanship. Well, I hope that the head thinkers in the Democratic Party can see what happens when you feel like you can reach across the table to Wall Street and the insurance companies and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I hope they can get a nice taste of what the reward of that is, because we can thank squarely. You know, we can talk about the Tea Parties, and we can be take all the easy targets that we do on the, as a, us on the left, and we can blame ignorance, and we can blame apathy, and we can say whatever we want, and we can stand indignant and say, well, people didn't vote. But at the end of the story, you know, as Malcolm X would say, we got bamboozled, and this in a two-party hegemony where people have nowhere to turn. This is what we can expect. And people like Russ Feingold, who are some of the only few dodo bird Democrats, the last remaining passenger pigeons, if you will, that actually carried the ball for traditional Democratic values. No, I think I'm going to turn off the radio for the next couple of weeks, because I'm not going to be able to deal with all of the NPR hand-wringing and, why is this, and all the navel-gazing, because we know darn well what happens when people who have real needs in a time of peril are totally have their backs turned on and are denigrated by an administration and a political party which had the absolute wind at its back with an unprecedented mandate. So thank you, Mr. Obama, and thank you, all of the cult of personality, hypnotized voters. This is what we better wake up and we better put some pressure. Guess what? Not on the Tea Party. We better put pressure on the people.
Democratic Party.
That is
Thanks
right.
a lot, Thomas. I think Thomas is speaking for a lot of people out there. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Dennis C. Theriault. He's the new news editor at the Portland Mercury. This show today, WTF just happened. Elections recap. The number to give us a call, 503-231-8187. And we have Ryan on the phone. What do you think, Ryan? Did you vote for someone? What? Did you not vote? What's your
take? No. Listen, love your show, Lisa. No, listen, I voted. I voted big. Call me Joe Tea Party. But you know what? I think the American people, the Tea Party, conservatives, whatever you want to call us, I think we spoke, and we spoke loudly yesterday, because I think America is really, really frustrated. I voted for Bush. I'm not defending him. You know, when he, I think the Republicans kind of lost their way a little bit, and that's why Obama won so big. But then I think he lost his way and went into a direction that even the progressives, some liberals, didn't want it to go. And I think we saw a balance. I think we saw it shift more to the center where the American people want it. I mean, that's my assessment of it. Too much spending, too much taxes, too much regulation. A health care bill that we do not want.
All right. Well, cool,
I mean,
Ryan.
Look what happened last night. What's your assessment? You give me.
I have a few ideas about it, Ryan. So here, I'm going to cut you loose to make room for more people, but this is what I want to tell you about. And by the way, the number to call, 503-231-8187. The thing that strikes me about what Ryan is saying, there's a number of things there that are resonating with me right now. First of all, when I look at, I think there's a lot of stereotypes about who is involved in the Tea Party, just like when you look at who was involved with the Barack Obama victory 2 years ago. And I think there is a big, as Richard Nixon used to call, the silent majority of people who just want to They just want the basics, you know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, right? And I think that a lot of people feel disaffected from the Democrats and the Republicans now for more than a generation. But one of the things that strikes me the most about this is money. I mean, Laura Flanders on Democracy Now, before we came on the air, the previous show, she was talking about how an unprecedented amount of money going into the Tea Party, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, as Thomas was talking about, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and a lot of this money anonymously just poured into the Tea Party, which had been an alternative quote unquote movement of people, you know, just like the Greens last night, 24 people in a room talking with each other with really old sneakers on, you know, and she called it a profit movement, right?
Sure.
Americans for Prosperity just started chucking money at this movement. And what strikes me is, in my opinion, if you throw enough money at it, it will vote. And no one gave this kind of money to the Reverend Yearwood with the Hip Hop Caucus, right? Which is kind of what we're talking about. No money there. So, you know, low minority participation in the election. But I think Ryan's got his fingers on the pulse. Sometimes I think the Tea Party thing, it's so far to the right that it's coming back along the left-hand side. And I see some of the values that people talk about there are values that I hear at KBOO. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, I think it's interesting what Thomas sounded a lot like a Republican would have sounded in 2008. There is this sense of purity that you can't be and do all things for all people as a party. You're going to lose your soul at some point if all you try to do is hold on to power by promising things to everyone. And it's interesting to think that if the Democratic Party, if the liberals, progressives need to do that and come back to their center and not worry about responding, just worrying about who they're serving, what they want to be, maybe they'll have a better mission, a better purpose, something to sell to people that really resonates with them and takes care of what they're looking for in 2 years.
Mm. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and we're talking about what the heck happened last night. The number to call, 503-231-8187. We have Robert on the phone. Robert, did you vote for winners? Did you vote for losers? What the heck happened?
Well, let me just start off by saying I didn't vote. This is a broken system, and I don't see any point in voting for the one party. You know, it's funny. I'm surprised. You sound like you have some surprise in your voice that the wackadoodles got a little leeway here.
And, well, you're right. I'm not big surprised,
yeah,
but
everyone saw this coming. And I'm gonna,
yeah,
I'm
it's true. They've been talking about this since before Obama was elected.
Amen. I'm going to tell you, I'm a progressive here. I do have some libertarian tendencies, but for the most part, I understand that our nation requires social structures that, you know, benefit the people and support, you know, moving a society forward and not just keeping them stagnant and, you know, wallowing in their own swell. But anyways, the a lot of people saw the inaction of the Democratic Party, which started before Obama was elected. When Nancy Pelosi said she wasn't going to prosecute any criminals, wasn't going to impeach any criminals and prosecute his underlings, well, you know, at that point, she kind of became illegitimate as a leader in my point of view. And then some of the things that she's done since then have just furthered the you know my viewpoint on her,
mm-hmm.
And not just her, it's all of them. You got what they call blue dogs.
Right,
those
right.
Are not Democrats.
Right. It's,
those are obstructionists from the right that have infiltrated the party on the left, and they're doing their job.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And the system is doing its own job of perpetuating its own self as well. So
I'll be honest with you, Lisa.
Yeah.
Yoo-hoo!
Okay.
The wackadoodles won. Here's
right.
What we got.
Thanks
we
a
got
lot.
2 years of wackadoodles shutting down the government and messing things up to the point where all Obama's going to have to do to get reelected with his 46% approval rating in this election right now
is start another war.
All he's got to do
so
is...
So no, go ahead.
Try to do any gosh darn thing and watch what they do. And then all he's got to do towards the next election is point a finger at them.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Robert. Thanks for calling. You know, on Democracy Now! Before this show, and that this show, Democracy Now!, will re-air this afternoon at 4, they had an interview with Michael Moore. Laura Flanders and Amy Goodman were interviewing Michael Moore, and he was putting out some really, really, really magical thinking around some of this stuff. Exactly. He asked the same question. What does Obama have to do? And he said, if Obama tomorrow turned around and said he would not accept any more money from Wall Street, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just listening to that and going, yeah, that's going to happen.
He's already kind of in deep with them. That's already how he got elected in the first place.
He's an economist. Yeah. Anyway, it's Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. It's Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. And I think there's a call coming in right now, too. The magical green light is lighting up. And we do have Jim on the phone. Jim, what's going on?
Hey, I'm looking at Politico's election map, and it looks like for the governor's race, with 94% reporting.
Which governor's race?
Oregon.
Okay.
And Dudley is leading 49.1%, Kitzhaber 48.2%. So there's just about 12,000 votes spread there. But what I called for, which I don't think anybody's mentioned so far, I'm a medical marijuana patient and I'm also a grower, and so I provide for three other patients. And I'm really disappointed that Measure 74 did not go through for the nonprofit.
Also down in California, too. That one went down as well, didn't it?
That's yeah, it did. And
I'm surprised.
I wasn't so surprised about that. I think it opened up the door for 2012. Mm. I'm pretty optimistic about that. But for Oregon being the first state to decriminalize back in 73, and I think we were the second state to, behind California, to actually have a medical marijuana law, I'm just really disappointed on the dispensary measure. I know the Mercury, I don't think, endorsed it. I don't remember exactly, but...
You're remembering correctly, we did not endorse it.
Yeah, yeah, but... I really feel a lot of patients don't know where to get medicine, and they should be able to have that right. The law states that cannabis should be treated like any other medicine, and in that regard, then patients shouldn't have to wait a year to find a grower and be forced to go to the black market.
Okay. All right, Jim. Well, thanks a lot for calling.
You bet.
And this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. We're doing... WTF just happened last night, elections recap. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Dennis Theriault. He's the Portland Mercury News editor. And we have another caller. Mickey's on the line. What do you think, Mickey? What happened last night?
Well, you know, I have to say I am a true conservative voter. And while I might be aligned with the left on certain issues, I generally tend to err on the side of caution where it comes to government and spending. And one of the things that really struck out to me on the ballot measures was that there were too many things crammed in on each ballot measure. There were some of them that if they had just included one thing, I would have voted for them, like actually the medical marijuana measure. If it had just been to have dispensaries, I probably would have voted yes. But when you throw in something extra like authorizing the state to start doing medical testing, that throws up warning lights for a person like me. Because we're already deep in due. Do we really want to step any deeper into something that's going to cost billions at a time when we already don't have it? When we're closing down schools, are we actually going to approve medical testing for something that, I'm sorry, has been tested for thousands of years?
No kidding, really. Here's the thing I want to ask you, Mickey. Again, on Democracy Now!, the show that was just preceding this one, Amy Goodman raised this point that throughout this election, the war itself was never even brought up as an issue. And when WikiLeaks did their great big document release a couple weeks ago, the Sunday morning shows, they just put an embargo on it, and actually most, if not all, television, mainstream television news organizations didn't cover it at all. And yet that's really where all of our money is going when you're talking about closing schools and all the debt that we're in right now. I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm an Iraq veteran, and I also happen to be 100% disabled due to my service in Iraq. So I have some pretty strong views on it, not least of which is that we are forgotten. How many people even realize that the U.S. military is not only in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also Somalia and South America? How many people even realize where we are all spread at and what we're doing on exactly how much of a budget? Because the military budget doesn't go to us. I can guarantee you that.
We don't even know where it all goes. Nobody knows.
We have to fight tooth and claw for anything. You know, for example, for medical care that we've been promised. Some of us have been waiting for over 5 years for surgery at the VA for wounds that we got in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, the so-called GI Bill, I have so many friends who have applied and never received a dime. You know, all of these benefits, and that's where, for me, the Democratic Party failed. Obama promised that he would get us out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and we are still dying there. We are still being maimed there, and we are still losing our minds there. And people don't understand how much of an impact this has on not only us military members, but our families. I know of several families that have been devastated by drug addiction and suicide and other social ills that could have been prevented if their fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers were actually home. There are so many families that can never have the fragility of their world restored to anything even remarkably close to sanity. And yet we still keep grinding on. This so-called withdrawal from Iraq is no withdrawal at all. All it is a reshifting. We're shifting infantry out and we're shifting engineers in. That's not a withdrawal.
Well, thanks a lot, Mickey. Thanks a lot for calling. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. We're WTF just happened last night, election recap. I'm Lisa, your host. We're live in the studio with Dennis Theriault. He's the Portland Mercury News Editor. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. Dennis has something he wants to say. I could tell. It's all over his face.
Well, I was thinking about the ballot measures and spending and what looks reckless. And I didn't get a chance. I wondered if Mickey would have voted for Measure 73, which a lot of people seem to vote for. And if you talk about spending and what that could cost the state, I wonder if people sort of forgot that argument when it came to that measure.
73 is
the mandatory minimum sentencing measure, the Kevin Mannix measure.
Oh, God, I forgot. It's the elephant in the room that we forgot to bring up.
It's the $91 million worst case scenario unfunded.
Unbelievable.
Cynical measure. And I'm surprised that people didn't see through the cost argument on that one when they voted for it in droves.
But that's something that we need to be pulling apart for the next few years, actually, that one, unpacking that one. And we do have Steve on the phone. What do you think? Steve, did you vote for increased mandatory minimums?
No, I think we've had enough of that. And Kevin Mannix needs to hinge his career on something besides that. But I didn't know it passed. It did, huh?
Yeah, I think it did.
Oh, well, we'll just build more prisons, and all those prisons will be really good.
We just shut one down.
That's when the time comes, too.
Yeah. Anyway, what's going on with you, Steve?
Well, let's see. You know, one thing I'd say to Nikki is, you know, I really feel for the veterans, because I'm not for that war, but when those veterans come home, they deserve this country's tender, loving care. And the Republicans, they say they support the troops and they're pro-war, and then they turn around and they deny and reduce veterans' benefits. And I don't know that the Democrats have done a good job at restoring that either.
Actually, in Oregon, our local representatives, I want to say Blumenauer, Wyden, Schrader, and somebody that I'm forgetting, is it Wu? God help us. Wu is kind of a zilch, by the way. But anyway, they have done a lot in the past year to try to investigate and bring pressure on what Mickey was talking about, the difficult time that veterans are having trying to get services, and also the way the National Guard is treated. Because in Oregon, of course, we don't have a military base, but we do have National Guard. And they're being treated as second-class citizens. They're being made to wait even longer than so-called active-duty military to get services. And I do respect our local congressional and Senate representatives for making a big issue of that on the national scene. But I hear what you're saying, Steve.
I wish I haven't followed that as well as I should have, but I haven't really heard about a big turnaround in veterans' benefits, though.
Yeah, remember John McCain even arguing against the whole idea of the GI Bill? What a guy. What a guy. Education? No.
He was an officer from an elite military family.
Right.
What did he know about?
Yeah, going back to the Revolutionary Times. Anyway, thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for calling.
Well, I actually called to say something else, though.
Okay.
Number two, the darn initiatives do have too much pack into them. I would be more willing to vote for them. But the thing I really wanted to call is that presidents sometimes talk about their legacy. Well, I think Mr. Obama's legacy will be cynicism, because he had so much excitement and enthusiasm when he went in, and people are just staying home from the polls now, and he can thank himself for that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Steve.
Bye.
You know, that issue about Obama, I mean, there's a couple things that people will bring up. As somebody else I heard yesterday talking about, it took 40 years to get this country as screwed as it is now. And there's no one, Jesus, would not be able to turn it around in 2 years. And I think some of the problems that we're seeing as a result of the past couple generations of Republican leadership, and I'm including Clinton in that, we might never, ever be able to fix. I mean, is to be honest with you about that. And the other thing around, again, with the Obama thing, it was a big shift when he was elected. And there were a lot of people that voted for the first time 2 years ago. And it's really what I think what we're seeing, as a couple people have pointed out, is a predictable shift back to the way, to the so-called normal or something like that.
I think people have been voting in anger for the last 4 years now. Actually,
maybe 12 years.
I think that's producing a lot of wild swings when you just don't like what you got. You just kind of forget that you're voting for people who you didn't like 2 years, 4 years ago.
And you're voting for another Mannix measure. Looking at the Mannix measures, it's all about jail, all about jail. Oh, let's close Marshall High School. Sometimes with this election stuff, I think that this is a direct outgrowth of the failure of our public education system, which is just as broken, if not more broken, than the electoral system. At least in the electoral system, you can throw money at people. I don't know. I'm just putting that out. And we do have a couple of callers. Hey, another Steve. Steve, what's going on with you?
What's going on with me? I'm kind of focused on fear and xenophobia.
Okay.
Yeah, the state of Oklahoma passed a measure that said their judiciary cannot consider Islamic law in their decisions.
Oh, that's useful.
Sharia is not coming to Oklahoma, so set your minds at ease.
Just in case, yeah.
You know what, though? They've got weather that can kill you right now. So we'll all stand back and see, you know, what the hurricanes, cyclones, blizzards do out there now.
Is that all I'm doing that to them?
Yeah, they could be really just provoking.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I think that what happened was fear and xenophobia won the day, and the people who hope Obama would be progressive stayed home.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
And it's interesting, too, because we just saw over this past weekend, people were asking whether the Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert rally to restore fear and or sanity could have an impact on the country. I mean, 250,000 people out there. Jon Stewart was super articulate. And,
yeah, but then again, you know, he compared Code Pink to Fox News. And I would ask Jon Stewart, when has Code Pink been wrong? I don't think I've ever been wrong.
Okay. Well, except for Pink itself, but that's okay. Thanks a lot, Steve, for calling. And the number to call, 503-231-8187. There's no way that there's a third Steve on the line. Steve?
Yes, sir. Yes, there is.
All righty, then. Is this a conspiracy?
It must be the Steve day.
And by the way, the engineer's name is Steve as well. But that's okay. Go ahead, Steve.
So that makes five of us, because there was one earlier, right?
There's four in total. Anyway, it's the Steve show. What do you think, Steve?
I think we aren't hearing a true progressive voice. You know, we have the Republican, which is corporate, big government, really, which is fascism, according to the dictionary. And then we have the Democrats that are conservatives, you know, because they too are the mega rich. Mm. So I want to get your opinion about the Green Party and the Progressive Party. The Progressive Party got 3% of the vote with Walt Brown, so they're a viable party in the state of Oregon now.
So, are you kidding me? Mr. Brown got 3%?
I looked at their website this morning. Yeah. So they're a viable party in Oregon. That's a pretty cool thing. Give me your opinions on Green Party and Progressive Party, please.
All right. Okay, Steve. I want you to sit down. You're probably already sitting down. I want all my Green Party pals, sit down. You're not going to like what I have to say. Okay. I'm a registered member of the Pacific Green Party. I've been a member of the Green Party for more than 10 years. And in fact, my brother was one of the people who originally got the Green Party on the ballot back in the late 80s, early 90s. And he and a small cadre of people worked their fingers to the bone to do that. And he actually lobbied the legislature to change the laws regarding third-party candidates to make it easier to get on the ballot. And this is what I have to say. I was at the Green Party party last night. Mr. Brown, I've known Mr. Brown since the 1980s. And he is, I mean, I'm surprised to say, to see that he made 3% of the vote to keep the Green Party on the ballot, because he didn't even remember me. And I've met him 100 times over the past, like, 20 years, 23 years. I told him who I worked for, and then he gave me this long rap about his long history with the Black Press and talked about, you know, this other newspaper that I don't work for after being introduced. It's like he couldn't tell the difference between different Black newspapers. And the issue that I have with the Green Party, and I also talked to this other really charming candidate last night, is that it's filled with crackpots. I'm just putting that out. It's filled with crackpots. And I listened to Ralph Nader, don't get me started on the Nader thing, on Democracy Now. Was it yesterday or the day before? I want to see a Green Party that evolves. I want to see a Green Party that has candidates that are not stoned right now when they're talking on the microphone. Not that Mr. Brown, he was not stoned, okay? I want to see a Green Party that actually has viable candidates in Oregon. And we have seen that in the past, but not last night. And I saw people, just like I saw at the Hilton Hotel, I saw people at that Green Party gathering that were people that I've known for years, and I never had thought that I ever wanted to see them again. And it's a long history. I know a person who is a past Green Party candidate for office who got arrested this year. He's got mental health problems. A lot of us do. But he beat up a young African-American gentleman, called him the N-word, and destroyed their homeless encampment. And now he's harassing my reporter, The Scanner, saying, no, no, no. It was that young African-American guy that beat me up and called me racial epithets. I need to see a Green Party that steps up and gets real. That's all I'm saying. And I love you, Steve. And I don't mean to be rude, but your mama has to tell you the truth sometimes. And I'm putting that out. I supported this party since probably maybe before you did, right? I supported this party when it was on my friend's kitchen table. And I'm putting that out. I'm going to take my allegiance away from the Green Party. I'm going to do that this week. I'm putting that out, okay? This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Dennis Theriault from the Portland Mercury. The number to call, 503-231-8187. We got Paul on the phone.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
So I guess that old axiom comes true. People get the government they deserve.
You know what, though? Here's an interesting one with this one. We saw the Supreme Court pass down that Citizens United ruling, right? And Justice Clarence Thomas supported the Citizens United ruling. And then we see Clarence Thomas's creepy blonde wife turn around and start her own nonprofit and start collecting money and pouring it into these races. I mean, there is a mechanism that's behind the scenes, golden compass style, that's twisting these dials in a way that normal people like us don't have access to, and we don't see it. I'm just putting that out. I mean, it's not always what we deserve, but I mean, if we could figure out a way to grab it back, that would be revolutionary. Literally.
I have a question for Dennis.
Okay. Sure.
Because I don't see how all these people are voting for Dudley, and I don't know if he has any, Dennis, if you have any information about if young people are or not. I mean, Dudley has been espousing the same policies that Republicans have been putting forth for the last 50 years in Salem, which got us the 14th lowest corporate tax rate. It would have been only 4, except if we hadn't passed that 80 ballot measure 84 last time around.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest unemployment in the state. And now the Mercury did come out against Measure 73, but how come I don't know that you guys did a good enough job about putting out that it's an unfunded mandate. Or maybe people have forgotten the term unfunded.
It's all on you, Dennis. You did that.
I think we ran that endorsement and pointed that out. And then Sarah Merck, our reporter, ran a story, the paper that came out before Election Day, all about that measure and how much it would cost social services and how much it would drive up prison spending. And, you know, $91 million that you know, advocates for the crimes that this measure purports to crack down on,
which are down,
they're down. And the advocate said this would actually devastate strategies that work on depressing these crimes and helping these victims. This is money for shelters, for counseling, that is not going to be there when we have to start opening prisons to add prison beds for these kinds of measures.
So, but like my question is, do you have any insight as to why people would swallow this line and why, because there wasn't a lot of money spent on Minister 73. And do you have any insight on why people...
I have some...
motivate people to vote for Chris Dudley, and I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks, Paul.
Why do people vote for Chris Dudley? I think part of the problem is, and I've only been here 3 months, so, but observing this governor's race, I think John Kitzhaber is not as perhaps exciting as you'd want your Democratic standard bearer to be. I think that's part of the issue, is that Oregon's had him before, and he didn't. I just don't get a sense from anyone that he particularly lit them on fire. And I think if he had been more inspiring, and this is a pretty short time sort of set of observations, but I think if he had done that, maybe that would have made a difference a little bit here.
You know what I think, Paul? So I'm a journalist, I'm a news editor also, and I've gotten press releases all this year around some of these races. And I have to say, I got to interview Kitzhaber and I got to interview Dudley. And you look around at the state of Oregon, Oregon has always been a state of liberal open-mindedness as well as totally whacked out right-wing hate black peopledness as well. You've always had that since day one. Actually, since the Europeans came to Oregon, you've had that. And this race is a perfect example. What really strikes me about Dudley, and I, you know what, I think he's going to win. And I feel like I called this in January. Dudley, his entire campaign staff are young people that are not from Oregon. A lot of these people worked on the McCain campaign, which, as we know, was not a successful campaign, but they're young. And I'm just going to also put this out. They don't give a damn about Oregon either, but they've been putting out commercials every like 2 times a week for the past 6 months, 4 months. They're literally, and I'm saying it this way, their campaign was like a scorched earth campaign. Dudley, hail fellow, well met. His staff, Buffy the Vampire Slayer type bad guy monster of the week people. And I put that out about them because I met them. And some of these people bragged about not wanting to change their phone numbers from DC numbers. They beamed in here. They were going to scorch the earth and they had scorn for Oregon. Okay. They had $9 million. Kitzhaber, something like $6 million. Kitzhaber campaign, laid back. Oh, it's Oregon. Are they going to return your phone calls? Maybe, maybe not. Is he going to show up in Madras? No. Dudley, his people put him on a bus tour. He went to every little town all over the state. He didn't leave a single corner of this state unturned. And that's the truth. For 6 months, he's been to Eastern Oregon, down by Klamath, all up the coast. God only knows places that we might not even be able to find on a map. And that paid off for him. He knew he was not going to get Multnomah County, you know, the People's Republic of Portland vote. And, you know, he hired these smart people. They're ruthless and they waved him around. And the other funny thing about it is, such a nice guy. This guy, he could chaw me a socks off. And when the Scanner News, where I work, when we did our candidate endorsement interview, I wasn't even going to be in on that, right? My boss, Bobby Dore Foster, said, Lisa, you better get in there. Because somebody needs to press that nice guy about why he's the Republican Party candidate and why the Republican Party's platform includes destroying the president. I was like, okay, God, you know. I went in there and I asked him the hard questions. He sweated them out. He didn't even know the answers to some of them. I'm just putting that out.
You know, it's funny you talk about his campaign consultants. They're the same people behind Meg Whitman, Arnold Schwarzenegger also. It's Mercury LLC, and they are a very well-oiled machine. And it didn't work with Meg Whitman in California, even though she spent $140 million. But in Oregon, you don't need to spend that kind of money. And you're absolutely right that his penetration everywhere but Portland.
Yeah.
Totally. You're right. That totally made a difference. And going up on the air, it might maybe that drove up his negatives a little bit. I don't know. I haven't seen any polling.
Only here, I bet, though.
But I think, you know, you're also driving up John Kitzhaber's. And that's really, you know, you're right. Scorched earth.
It's this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Dennis Theriault from the Portland Mercury. He's the news editor over there. We're basically looking at WTF just happened elections recap. And we have another caller. Shauna's on the line. What's going on?
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was calling about the military issue. I think it was Nikki that brought it up, and I wanted to say, you know, we do as a country forget the military's contribution to what goes on. And I think part of that is because the wars, like when Bush and Cheney were dragging us into both of these wars, I was protesting both of them myself with my, at that time, very young daughter. They do get forgotten. And I remember, you know, studying Vietnam and then later on in the 80s, you know, when Platoon and stuff comes out. And I'm like, look at these horrible things that happen. And everybody just kind of glosses over them. And those wars are what's costing us more money than anything, more than welfare moms, more than unemployment. They're outside of the budget, so it never really gets brought up. Like you said, I think someone mentioned none of this was brought up during any of this campaign, but that's where the money goes even more than anything. You know, Ford, yeah, whatever, and Wall Street, I'm all for not giving them any more cash. But Bush saved United Airlines after 9/11. I mean, they started doing that too. The military is always forgotten, and it's something that nobody remembers when it comes time to beat the war drum, that this is going to cost human lives and lots of money. And I wish people would vote in that respect instead of just knee-jerking every time an election comes around to the opposite side of the pendulum, you know?
Yeah, which is what people predicted was going to happen. Thanks a lot for calling, Shauna.
Thank you.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, I'm going to stay behind the mic, and my guest is going to be Bill Fletcher Jr. of the Black Commentator and the Center for Labor Renewal. He recently wrote the piece, Enthusiasm, I'm Not Interested in Things Getting Worse. Bill Fletcher, he's got a lot to say about the elections. At 9:30, remembering Doris Granny D. Haddock. Remember Granny D? When the 2010 midterm election set a record for campaign spending, it's good to remember Doris Granny D. Haddock, who gave the last 15 years of her life to getting money out of politics. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, author and activist Laura Flanders on the elections and the Tea Party, and Dr. Quentin Young, National Coordinator of Physicians for a National Health Program, talk about how health care reform was botched. At 11 on The Bike Show, they look at how higher education is shaping the future of cycling with PSU Transportation Options Manager Ian Stood and Lynn Weigand of Initiative for Bicycle and Pedestrian Innovation. And we hear about the new TriMet Bike and Ride program from Director Colin Maher. That's coming up on KBOO. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. The number to call, we've got a few minutes left, 503-231-8187. Huck Hobo is on the line. Huck, what's going on?
Thank you for taking my call. I just have two things I wanted to say. One was that, I was pretty saddened to find out this morning now that I'm 73 about the prisons, that was shot down, that it did pass. So that's really disappointing because I voted no for that because we don't need more money being dumped into that. And it's just kind of, it takes the power out of the actual judges, out of the law. So be having a mandatory sentencing. And the other thing I wanted to say really quickly is I read the Mercury every week. You know, I choose that one over the Willamette. It makes me laugh. It's funny. But it was just kind of a little disheartening when 2 weeks ago they did shoot down 74, which I also voted no on 74. But then the following week, like, there was an ad in there, like, voting yes on 74, yes, 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 like, taking up almost a whole page. So in this whole thing about, like, you know, people taking money for this and that and advertising, that's, they kind of, you know, it's kind of what they did a little bit. You know, they shot the measure down, but then they went ahead and chose to run the ad.
Well you do choose to win the ad, run the ad. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but that's you know, again, that's not my decision. And, you know, nobody came to me and said, we would really like you to endorse one way or the other. That was totally our call. And, you know, I know it doesn't always appear that the walls are up with publications, but in fact, in this case, it certainly was. And, you know, we also were happy to debate the folks on the other side on our blog after we put our endorsement out. And I thought it was a good conversation. And you know, I just want to point out that those are very separate things.
But here's the other thing. I mean, traditionally, when you're looking at any kind of publication, television, radio, when it comes to elections time and elections advertising, placing of ads by a campaign, it does a lot of different things. It has a lot of different purposes. And it is, in a sense, of course, it's separate from whatever the editorial department decides to endorse. But that's kind of the whole point of investing your advertising money in a publication. You know, you raise that money for a purpose. You're not just you're not going to spend all that money on signs in people's yards. So you're grabbing part of the public attention. I mean, that's the purpose of it. And that's why it was so interesting how few campaigns chose to purchase ads in minority publications in the Portland area. I mean, I think that you're seeing in some of these races the result of a lack of the Democratic Party specifically to focus on the Black community, the Asian community, the Hispanic community, to try to invest in those institutions and even just engage the readers or the listeners. I mean, we've got Radio KBMS in Vancouver, right? They broadcast all kinds of stuff up there. I think that there's a purpose in campaign advertising, and when it takes place, you know, you're trying to grab people's attention. You're trying to keep your name in front of the electorate. When you don't make an effort to grab that attention, you're basically just writing all those people off. And so there's a lot to be said about campaign advertising, why to choose, but it doesn't have anything to do with the editorial point of view. Although it has to be said in this beautiful moment that, Dennis, your predecessor, Matt Davis, did some juicy gotcha reporting about the Oregonians advertising for campaigns about 6 months ago. Hans Christian Andersen III over there, or whatever his name is, there were some interesting stories. People could go and look those up from 6 months ago on the Mercury News. But anyway, the number to call, we have a few minutes left, 503-231-8187. And we do have another caller.
I think what we're seeing...
No, go ahead, Natano.
Okay, yeah. I think what we're seeing here is Karl Rove's coup of 2000 hitting full stride.
That's what Laura Flanders suggests as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's, you know, it takes a little while or in a democracy for a coup to really come into full swing. And I think by 2012, we're going to see this thing in full, you know, in full mode, because no one's talking about exit polling, and the Democrats still refuse to talk about vote counting. And when you say, when I hear these people say, well, we got to get off the boat because, you know, we got to overwhelm them with these bigger numbers because we know everything's rigged, we've lost the battle. If we're acknowledging that the vote counting is being done in Karl Rove's living room, then, you know, we've got a lot bigger problem than just a bunch of mealy-mouthed people like Harry Reid working for the Republicans.
All right, that's right, that's right, that's right. The magical engineering pixie reminds us that the Republican favored companies actually make the voting machines.
Not only that, every time there's a mistake, it always, 100% of the time, it favors the Republican candidate. Look at Fooled Again by Mark Crispin Miller's book. Just read the first couple pages of that thing, and the statistical probability of Bush winning either of those elections was like 1 in 250 million. And, you know, that constitutes a miracle. And all these, you know, right-wing groups are always waiting for this miracle, but there wasn't a single word about it in the, you know, the corporate so-called liberal media.
Just like the WikiLeaks. Well, thanks a lot, Natano, for calling. You know, although I want to point out on that one, the Democratic Party in Oregon doesn't have such super-duper clean hands. And I can remember, was it 4 or 6 years ago, Ralph Nader trying to get on the ballot in Oregon, and at the ballot nominating convention that was held, Democrats came into, I believe it was a Green Party nominating convention, packed out the convention, and deliberately derailed his effort to get on the ballot. Was that 8 years ago? So it's not always just the Republicans that have a little bit of mud on their hands with that. And we'll be looking to see what came about with this election. I know that people were complaining in Texas yesterday about not enough machines or some issues around the machines. And we're going to go just a tiny bit long today. And we do have another caller. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Joe's on the line.
Well, hey, Lisa, how you doing?
I'm just dragging. I'm crabby. It was just a nightmare last night. I went to this Democratic Party thing, and I'm just saying, I felt dirty.
Okay. Well, hopefully I'll cheer you guys up.
Okay.
Hey, so, you know, I think that for me, the important thing to keep in context here, or keep in mind, is a bigger context. And You know, the whole powerfulness of America is on the wane, and really, irregardless of who holds the White House or the Congress, really, when the bills come due, they're going to come due, and there ain't nothing we can do about that. And you know, I don't know. I think it'd be kind of nice to have the Republicans to be around to take some of the blame when, you know, this whole thing falls in and implodes on itself. And by that, I mean, you know, the whole economy thing, which, as we're finding out, is well based on fraud, you know, Democratic and Republican fraudsters as well.
The bank fraud.
We've got all these losing wars, you know, and losing wars eventually do get lost no matter how hard we try. We got that hanging over our head. And, you know, and the other thing is, you know, 9/11 is coming out. I mean, you know, they're trying to keep hiding from it, but, you know, that's another big game changer that's coming out as well. So this is kind of like, to me, it's like, this is what it looks like before we go into the vortex.
You're totally cheering me up, Joe. I need you to stop it right now. Thanks for calling, Joe. You're just,
thank you.
I can't handle the joy, happiness, and super ultra concentrated joy, as they call the dishwashing liquid. But anyway, it looks like we're going to wrap it up. I just want to thank Dennis for being here.
Thanks, Lisa.
Dennis, there y'all. Portland Mercury, you're going to be checking out the Mercury, checking out KBOO. Check out the Scanner News also for our election coverage today. And remember, 4 o'clock this afternoon, Democracy Now! Replays that amazing interview with Laura Flanders and Michael Moore. And stay tuned. I'm going to be talking with Bill Fletcher, Jr. of the Black Commentator.